Okay, we'll start for today. Little housekeeping catch up. Today we're gonna finish the aterragota, and we may have enough time to start on the pterygotes, and we'll start with the mayflies. But when we get to the end of the aterragota, and I'll say this is the stopping point, that's where we end for the material for the first exam, which we're still on for a week from today, right?
Mm-hmm. Today's Tuesday.
Yeah, a week from today. So I've been sending those emails. You guys have gotten the emails. I got more stuff posted yesterday, and I'll try to get our lecture up today, and I guess I got to go ahead and start getting the stuff for the ephemeroptera up. So anyway, any questions come to mind before we get started today? So, well, we were, like I said, in the middle of the aterragota. What was the last thing? Oh, we did the diplura. Just finished the diplura. Mm-hmm. Which was the last order in the intonatha, right? Mm-hmm. Now we're going to the groups that have the mouth parts external. That's how I usually do it. Now we're in the ectonatha, and the first order we'll cover today is the microchorypha, and it used to be thrown in with the next order, the microchorypha and the thysanura, which they do look a lot alike, but remember the big distinguishing character, or one of them that separates them, it's not easy for you to see to separate them, but is that the microchorypha, the mandibles only have one point of articulation, right? So they're the monocondylia, whereas the thysanura that we'll get to in a minute, the mandibles have two points of articulation, and so would be the dicondylia. The microchorypha, the order name micro means small, and before we were learning the ending ura means tail. Well, chorypha is the other end, means head. So these are the small headed bugs. Up there, okay. And I don't know, I guess their head looks a little bit small for their bodies, but anyway, they're commonly called jumping bristle tails. Again, the order name is small headed. Their metamorphosis is still ametamorphosis, or not going through metamorphosis. The adults and the immatures look very similar, just difference in size. As I said, they used to be thrown in with the thysanura. These tend to be a little bit more cylindrical in cross-section, where the thysanura tend to be a little bit flatter. These also tend to be more, hold their body more arched, like you see the one in the middle here, how the body is kind of arched. And these usually have a pair of fairly large compound eyes that we say are contiguous. You know what contiguous? So the eyes are contiguous. And essentially that just means that they come right next to each other. They're almost bumping each other. So, and we'll use this term fairly often, a lot of times in association to like the legs, the coccyx come off, may be contiguous or they may be separated. But that's what contiguous means, is that they're right next to each other, almost in contact with each other. The ocelli are always present. The antennae are long and filiform. They have three caudal appendages, the paracerci, and then the middle one is called a median caudal filament. one thing that might also help is that you can see they, and these, most of the time the three caudal filaments are directed almost straight back from the body. Whereas we'll see in, at least in some of the Thysanura, they're more spread out. The mid and hind cocci bear styli, so there'll be a big, not a big, but a stylus coming off the middle and hind cocci, which I believe is lacking in the Thysanura. And then there's a pair of styli on most of the abdominal segments. You can see those illustrated down to the lower right, the styli coming off the... They also, the abdominal segments usually bear one to two pairs of eversible glands. Eversible means that they're at normal position, they're inside their body, but they can evert them to outside their body. And here again, they think it's for water uptake, that it helps them absorb water.
Mm-hmm. Where are the eversible glands?
I don't know that they're illustrated on here, but there's one or two pairs on each body segment. Yeah, that's probably what they're trying to show right here, the exertile vesicle. And so it'd be just right there. In the lower right hand. Usually the bodies are covered with scales, kind of scaly body. You can kind of visualize that in the picture clear over to the far left. These have the habit that when they go through a molt, they actually cement themselves to their substrate. So kind of cement themselves, attach themselves to the substrate, and then they can crawl out of that skin. My notes say that if they come loose, then they won't be able to finish their molt. And so,
they secrete something through those glands to
something? My notes don't say anything about those glands. I don't know where the substance that they use to cement themselves down comes from. Except my notes say that the versatile glands are more in water uptake, but. These are relatively active insects. They do jump when they're disturbed. They tend to feed on algae or mosses, fungi, dead decaying materials. There's only two families, and we're only going to study one of them. The one that you need to know is the minor Telidae. I guess it's not spelled on here, so... problem is that, I mean, this is what we have specimens of, at least what we think. The other family is the Machillidae. I think we used to require the Machillidae in here because that's what we thought we had, and then Jerry and I looked at them closer and we decided they weren't Machillids after all, they were minor Telids. One of the ways you tell them apart is that the abdominal sterna are larger in one than the other. And what we're talking about is these little, just these little, this is the abdominal sterna, these kind of diamond-shaped on the far right-hand side down the middle. Whereas if you look at the one bottom second to the left, they just look a little smaller. And that difference isn't very much. But also, the first two antennal segments are heavily scaled in the Machillids, but they're not heavily scaled, or they lack scales. So the first two antennal segments may be scaly or not scaly. If they're scaly, they're Machillids. If they're not scaled, then they're minor Telids. As I said, the minor Telids have been collected in the Fargo area, but we don't know of any recent captures. So it'd be a neat thing if you'd catch some minor Telids or Microcorypha. Okay, let's move on to the Fice in Europe. The Fice in Europe. Thysan means bristle. There's your ura means tail. So these are literally the bristle tails. And it does refer to the three caudal appendages. Notice here now how the appendages tend to, again, be more spread out more than what we saw in the microcorypha. Mm-hmm. Also, remember the microcorypha had those large compound eyes that were nearly contiguous. In the Thysanura, they may have compound eyes, or they may lack compound eyes, but if they do have compound eyes, they'll be much smaller and not as contiguous as we saw in the microcorypha. And the same with the ocelli, they may or may not be present. These tend to be a little bit more flatter. They don't have their bodies near as arched as you see in the microcorypha. They also lack the styli on the mid and hind coxae. They also, their bodies are often covered with scales. Again, here their mouth parts are external. They are the in the ectonatha, and again the mandibles are two points of articulation. In fact, they're illustrating that right here. Two condyles. There's a point of condyles are kind of the points of articulation. So there's a pair and there's a pair. So there probably was one term I should have mentioned with the microcorypha. This is going back to the microcorypha, but that monocondylic, they consider that the ancestral. And sometimes you'll see the archaeonatha. This is refers to microcorypha. I just want to make you aware of that in case you see archaeonatha. Literally it means old, archaeo, old, natha, jaws, so it's the old jaws. It's the old ancestral form of just monocondylic. Now, back to the Thysanura. They had the two points of articulation. The antennae are elongate, filiform. Again, they are part of the Atergota, lack wings. Most of the abdominal segments bear styli. Most species live in the soil and leaf litter or rotting wood logs. There are a couple species, however, that live in human dwellings and are considered pests. This group is interesting in that some species will continue to molt even after they reach adulthood. All other insects, when they reach the adult stage, that's it on molting, but some of these will molt. I think, I don't have it written down in these notes. I seem to recall that they've recorded up to like 30, 35 molts. Again, your book covers three families. We're only going to talk about one of them. The other two, there's the Lepidotrichidae that contains one species in Northern California, so we don't care about that one too much. The Nicoleptiidae has five North American species, but they all occur in Florida and Texas. The only family we're going to talk about is the Lepismatidae. The Lepismatidae does contain these economic species, the silverfish and the firebrats. Mm-hmm. In the lepus matids, the compound eyes are present, but their cellae are absent. The silverfish is Lepisma saccharina. Saccharina refers to sugars, and that's why they're a pest. They like to eat starchy stuff, so it might eat book bindings, they might eat the wallpaper paste, and so they can cause a lot of damage that way. They tend to be in a little bit cooler areas of buildings and that. Whereas the fire brat, as the name would imply, this its scientific name is Thermobia domestica. So it's domesticated, so to speak. But it tends to be in warmer areas. The silverfish are more gray in color, found in cool, damp situations, and the cercei tend to stick more out at a right angle. So this would be more like what you would see in the silverfish, with these the lateral cercei sticking more out, straight out from the sides of the body. Whereas the fire brats, they tend to be more at an angle backwards. They tend to be a little more gray in color. While the fire brats is tan or brown, silverfish are more gray. And you may be able to catch both of them. And sometimes we've caught, especially the fire brats, I think, because it's so warm, but catch them right here in the building. We used to send the 350 students down in the stairwell. This stairwell over here is really warm all the time. And I hate to say it, but my lab across the hall from the museum, one of my past graduate students, the ones from Chile, left several boxes of stuff here that they couldn't take on the airplane to go back home. And I was looking through it the other day, and it ran so fast and I didn't catch it. So I don't know if it was a silverfish or a fire brat, but there was one running around in their box of stuff. So they're up here.
If you want to go on a nice cruise while catching, or a nice relaxation trip while catching some insects, go to a sauna up there. There are a couple of fire brats in, well, at Concordia's sauna at least.
Oh, are they? Yeah.
Ian Bjorn occasionally go, so.
Yeah, you
haven't gone recently, though.
I say, occasionally you'll see them in people's bathrooms. That'd probably be more the silverfish, but run around in the bathtub or something like that. So. And so that ends the A pterygota, and that is the stopping point for the first exam. And I'm going to stop the